It used to be, not even so long ago, that we all knew the two topics to avoid at the dinner table, religion and politics. But I think we can all agree that there's been a shift in that, like it or not, and both topics are being discussed more openly and certainly more often than either have been in a very long while. At least the political part of that duo of taboo, anyway. So usually here on the Saturday Night Special, we tackle a very big topic and then we spend the whole night unearthing as many aspects of it as we possibly can with help from various experts and academics connected to the field. But if we aim to tackle the behemoth topic of simply politics, that can be a lot of things. Headlines from just this week, a look at particular areas of politics like state house or national or international. We would need far more than just a single show to even make a dent in that if we were going to take on the whole topic. Yet, no matter how you voted, I think we can all agree that we're in a period of great change, one that will likely be looked back on years from now as one of rapid social change. At least one can hope. And while the topic of politics used to be taboo until we were certain we were in company of only those with whom we agreed, one can also argue that in such a time, it's important to talk and listen and talk and keep talking and keep listening. And tonight's no different, and that we're going to stay on one theme and wrestle with it as much as we possibly can. Only tonight, I'm pairing the usual Saturday Night Special with one of the other programs I do here on WGN Radio, and that is Guth and Hupke on Politics, a relatively irreverent political show in which Chicago Tribune columnist Rex Hupke and I examine the latest political headlines in a given week. He is in studio here with us tonight, and we'll be taking a look at as many of this week's headlines as they are connected to politics and looking at the bigger picture of each for context. I'm Amy Guth, and that's all coming up tonight on the Saturday Night Special on 720 WGN.
Live from the biggest small town in America.
This is WGN Chicago, radio home of millions throughout mid-America.
Radio, well, radio became the Pied Piper to a strange new world.
Time to climb up on our big shoulders and get inside our massive heart.
This is the Saturday Night Special with Amy Guth.
You heard the woman. This is the Saturday Night Special, and I'm Amy Guth. Good to be back with you. It's been a couple weeks. We've been doing lots of Blackhawk stuff, so it's nice to be back here with you tonight. And tonight, we're going to be talking about this week's political headlines, and we're joined by Chicago Tribune columnist Rex Hupke. He's in studio with us tonight to co-host. He and I do a weekly podcast. I'm not sure if you know about that, but it is called Guth and Hupke on Politics. We do it straight to WGNRadio.com. You can also find it on iTunes. If you want to subscribe, you can find it either place. But for now, we're going to be right here in studio and we'll be unpacking the big political stories from the week, at least as many as we can during the show tonight. So given the very busy political landscape, though, we have a lot of stuff to analyze, a lot of stuff to talk about, a lot of stuff to sift through. So I cannot promise that we're going to have a ton of room for calls because we have so much to talk about. But if you do call, please be sweet to esteemed producer Tom Hush. When you do, he is the voice you'll hear on the other end of the line. So we'll be right back to get the conversation underway on 720 WGN. Old Thomas Dolby for you there. Blinded by Science. It's a good one from the Wayback Machine. 720 WGN, it's Amy Guth, and this is the Saturday Night Special. And tonight we have our good friend Rex Hupke with us in studio, hanging out. He is the co-host of Guth and Hupke on Politics, our political podcast that we do for WGNRadio.com. You can also find it on iTunes. And he is a Chicago Tribune columnist. And we team up for basically weekly therapy in the political arena.
It is therapy, indeed. Yes. Well, and so we all need it.
It's true. I mean, you went on vacation that one week, and I missed our weekly therapy session with politics. I was like, the headlines are stacking up, and I haven't complained to anyone about them.
The pressure in my brain has increased dramatically.
There is a Twitter account called Endless Screaming, and all it does is, in all caps, just tweet A and lots of H's of varying lengths. Yeah, that's all it does. And I probably retweeted that account 3 or 4 times that week. Because it always works, no matter what's going on in the world. Just retweet that, and it works.
It's appropriate. It's not just politics, folks. It's everything.
Well, so we are talking about politics tonight on the Saturday Night Special, and there's lots to do there, of course, because there's a ton of that going on, as ever, always in the world. But I think we're talking, all of us in this country and in this world, it seems like we're talking about politics a lot more. We're not so much doing so behind closed doors where we know we're only talking with people who agree with us, but thanks to social media, anyway, we're talking with people on the other side of the world. We're talking in real time. We're having a lot of conversations, sometimes polite, sometimes not even a little bit. But there was a very big, I guess you could say, conversation that happened today in many U.S. cities, and that was the Science March. There were 40,000 people in Chicago. I was on the air this morning for the business lunch from noon to one. And I saw so many signs going by on the way to the march and lots of people coming back from it after. I saw a couple of people in T-Rex outfits.
Of course,
because why not? With tiny arms running down Michigan Avenue.
Having a very hard time going to the bathroom because they can't reach anything with their arms.
So funny. It was really good. But there were some really creative signs. A lot of news outlets have gathered them that I think are very, very funny. I also like the pictures that showed up from the various marches around the world. There was one in Greenland, and it was like 7 people all in snowsuits, and they're just kind of holding like, we are the march.
We are cold.
For science.
But we believe in temperature.
Yeah. So a lot of them that said things like, the revolution will be peer reviewed, and what do we want? Evidence, like information, evidence-based information. When do we want it? After peer review. There's lots of really clever ones. And what was the one you just saw that said?
Yeah, society should work. I'm sorry. Society should worry when geeks have to demonstrate. I thought that was fantastic.
I like that one.
Got the plague? Me neither. Thanks, science.
There's one with a little sign. I love when people put signs on their dogs for marches and things like that. There's one that says, save the earth. It's the only planet with puppies.
Yes, exactly. Less invasions, more equations.
That's cute.
And then there's one that's just a profile of Donald Trump, black with a white profile, you know, of his head, and it just says absolute zero.
Ooh, yeah. Well, they were happening around the country today, around the world today, and so there was a lot going on social media, a lot of people tweeting signs and shirts, and a lot of little kids holding cute signs like "I drew the Earth." It was really very, very cool.
It was, yeah, and a good turnouts too across the board. I mean, there were L.A. and not just the big cities though. You were seeing
everywhere.
Turnout in little places in Colorado and Arizona and all over.
And I thought it was an interesting, yet another example of how people are organizing on social media and how you can watch it in real time, even if you're not participating. I mean, I was sitting there looking at Twitter, following different hashtags, and I felt like I knew what was going on with several different marches where I knew people that were involved in them. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, you know, such an interesting part of social media where you can watch, you know, political action happening like that in real time when people are protesting.
And I think it draws people as well, because they see themselves, you know, they see all these people out there running around and they see everything happening. And so I think it brings more people out than as opposed to if they were reading about it in the next day's paper or something like that. So I think it has a self-generating effect as well.
My worry, though, for this one is that I think there was a little, I suppose this is always the case, because I think we had this conversation right after the Women's March, but it seems like there was a little more kind of vague clarity on why people were there. You know, during the Women's March, I went out there and I was putting a recorder in people's faces and saying, why are you here today? What stake do you have in this? Why does this matter to you? And I got a lot of audio. I played a lot of it that later that night on the show. But for this one, I was watching people tweet, and it seemed, I mean, generally people were going, I want to save the earth, and I'm on board with Earth Day and kind of vague things like that. But not as many people were really, really connecting it to this kind of post-fact, alternative fact, this is why science matters, climate reality sort of narrative.
I think that maybe having it on Earth Day might have muddied the waters a bit.
So it's muddied the water.
Yeah, clean water. Anyway, but yeah, I think the message did, to me, the message generally was just about the importance of science and perhaps the existence of science in reminding people that hey, this is a real thing. But I think right now it's being attacked on so many different fronts. I mean, you can look at the environmental aspect of scientific knowledge and thoughts on what we should be doing, versus what's happening politically. But it's not just that. I mean, science, even like just knowledge in general, is suddenly by some viewed almost as a negative, it seems like. And, you know, there's a anti-intellectualism that's happening.
Oh, for sure.
And that ties in with it as well. But I agree with you. I think that the message here wasn't 100% clear. It was good and it was fun. And certainly everybody was nice. And I like to see people.
People were dressed like dinosaurs. It was awesome.
Yeah, I'm never going to complain if there's a dinosaur walking around.
It's pretty funny. Like but more than one T-Rex running down Michigan Avenue. Not a thing you see every day.
Right. But, you know, you almost wonder if some of the lack of focus might come from, again, the multitude of ways in which science is sort of under attack right now under the Trump administration, because we've seen the number of things that they have that the administration has either done or intends to do, which is not solely focused on science in terms of climate change. It's focused on science just in terms of medical research.
I was gonna say, to me, it's about this all kind of sprung up, and there's a very short, you know, point A to point B here from looking at proposed budget cuts
right.
under the Trump administration. When you're talking about chopping the EPA, when you're talking about a huge, huge, very significant cut to the NIH, that's to me what really prompted this. And I think that that had been diluted a little bit by the time we got to things that were actually happening this morning and things people were tweeting, which I'm not saying across the board. There was plenty of people that were there sharing information and very clear about why they were there and what they were protesting. But to me, I think it's so important when there's any sort of protest, any sort of display like that, it's very important to be clear on what you want to come from it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I mean, you and I have talked about this so many times on the podcast that when we were in the Gulf 10, 12 years ago, there was a lot of protests going on. There was like a big protest one night that ended in front of the Boeing headquarters building. And I was out there with a tape recorder asking people why they were there, what they were doing. And a lot of people were just kind of like, I want to be part of something. Hell yeah. And not really clear on what was at stake that night, what was happening politically, what was happening in the House right then. And, mm-hmm. I just think that's so important. And I think that's a thing and I'm not really faulting people. I'm not calling people dumb per se. I'm not doing that. I'm saying
when somebody says that, you know that someone's calling you dumb. I'm not saying you're dumb per se.
I'm just saying that I think that we are, especially now, so overwhelmed with information
yes.
that it's hard to stay on top of it, and it's hard to be clear about where you stand on something when there's so much information flying at you in a given day.
Yeah, I think you're right. And it's incumbent on people to focus their message. That's the world we live in now. Like just exactly what you said, there's so much information that if you are going to get a point across and you have a message, you better be clear about what that is. Otherwise, it's going to be taken in 17 different directions and then diluted. You know, and then that, and then the overall impact is.
Well, I think there's a lot of work that's being done too to help. To help scientists get that message. And I think there was a really great op-ed written by an anthropologist at Loyola Chicago, Kristen Krueger, who basically was like an open appeal to journalists saying, look, we, the scientists, have been through this before because politicians have questioned our credibility for years. Mm. Let us team up and help each other right now. We can help give you a lot of information and you can help us distill and share the right information, because I think that's where the disconnect, but I think that's where the problem lies a lot of times with, in particular, with science journalism and sharing scientific data, that it's easy to say there's a headline saying this cures cancer or this has been discovered, but there's always a nuance to it. And I think we should partner up to be more responsible with our storytelling, because I do think we're all doing our best, but to communicate that kind of that nuance.
Yeah, absolutely. That's always been, I think, one of the biggest problems in the scientific community, is that scientists are brilliant at what they do, and they unravel amazing mysteries and find out all kinds of incredible things that are incredibly important to the world. But they, generally speaking, are very bad communicators.
There's some scientists like shaking their fist at the radio right now.
Right. Well, no, but I think they would agree with that. I before I became a journalist, I was a chemical engineer, and I was around scientists all the time, science related people,
sure.
et cetera. And it was just stunning how bad people were at. They'd have great, brilliant things, but man, they couldn't explain it for the life of them. Like, you know, you try to be like, well, why is that important? And just for, it just wouldn't happen. And so then you have journalists, most generally speaking, who don't have a science background.
We can explain things all day long.
We're great at explaining things, but we're not necessarily great at like understanding, wait, what now? What's that equation? So yeah, there's a disconnect there, and it's a real, when it happens, when you get a story in the mainstream press or broadcast or whatever that really dives into a scientific concept and explains it and in a way that people really get it and everybody connects, that's a great thing. But it is hard. And I'm not blaming journalists and I'm not blaming scientists. I mean, it's simply like, it's almost like a translation issue.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah, it's tricky. But yeah, I think now more than ever, because there's such skepticism out there, driven a lot by people in politics who are trying to say...
Well, and it's cyclical. I mean, I think there's a lot to it. And we got to go to break here in a second. Sorry. But I think it's so cyclical. I mean, I say this, I think I have not been through a single show in the last year without saying this. But I always think anytime someone says the media, like, please, like, that's only creating confirmation bias. So that when someone is saying something different, first of all, there's not one media. Mm-hmm. There are many people that make up the body of, right? But if people are saying this narrative of the media says this, if someone is saying something counter to that, it won't be heard. It won't land. It really is. There's a lot of data about this, about confirmation bias. And so I'm going to die on that hill, because I'm always like, don't say the media. Really, really, just point to the one. I mean, because a lot of times if you push someone on that, they'll say, okay, it is this one story that I read about this. I'm like, just say that. Yep. Anyway. Tangents for another day. This is
we're gonna put a pin in that.
Right, put a pin on that for another day. Okay, we're gonna take a break, get you to news, all the good stuff. Amy Guth and Rex Hupke on the Saturday Night Special tonight, hanging out with you till 9 o'clock. Back in just a bit on 720 WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth here on the Saturday Night Special. Tonight, Rex Hupke, Chicago Tribune columnist, is co-hosting, hanging out with us in studio. You can catch us every single week on Guth and Hupke on Politics. It is a podcast that we do straight to WGNRadio.com. You can find it on the website, on WGN Plus, on that cool app that we got there, or you can find it on iTunes, wherever you would like to find it. You may do so. Warning, we might swear once in a while on that show.
I have heard that there could be...
allegedly.
An occasional naughty word.
We're doing our best not to swear tonight, because we're talking all about politics. We're essentially doing that show live tonight without the swearing. That's the thing.
On the podcast, we swear so you don't have to.
That's true. Well, so we were talking about the Science March and how a lot of people all around the world gathered today to protest proposed budget cuts that would impact science and some other things. And some people were just kind of out partying for Earth Day. That's all valid things to do. There is a story on the Huffington Post about, in particular, connecting some of Trump's actions around the environment. But, you know, I don't know if you follow POTUS on Twitter, but he, you know, he's known for tweeting some things that raise some eyebrows. I think you got his tweets pulled up, don't you, there?
I do, yes. He's staring me right in the eyes here, I have to say. So this morning he tweeted, let me just read it, first tweet. Today on Earth Day, we celebrate our beautiful forests, lakes, and land. We stand committed to preserving the natural beauty of our nation.
So that doesn't sound like him.
It doesn't, and I doubt it was. But, and I do mean but, he turned 3 hours ago.
And what time did he send the first tweet?
The first one was 6 hours ago, so what would that be? Like
1:30-ish. Our time.
And, so 3 hours ago, he says, I am committed to keeping our air and water clean, but...
Here we go.
Always remember that economic growth enhances environmental protection. Jobs matter! ! So, I felt it's like he put out, somebody put out that first one,
and he
took
so
a look
mad.
At it,
yeah,
and he's like, well, let's hold on, let's soften that a little bit, and now I do not know what the exact evidence is that economic growth enhances environmental protection, but I don't know that he has the best track record thus far to trust in his overall care, given that the first thing practically that his administration did on the environmental front was to do away with the stream protection rule, which
those streams are just
which actually limited the toxic waste that coal companies can dump in rivers, which doesn't seem like a big ask, really, that we say you need to
just don't dump the chemicals in the rivers.
Don't put that stuff in the rivers.
No, that's too much.
But yeah,
and so I mean, and he is on this like striking down regulations kind of tear for sure, and he promised / warned that he was going to do that, and indeed he is. You know, I think that this is not an original thought. Other people have been saying this, but to again put a pin in this. When we say regulation, that word has it's important that we think about that, because a lot of times people say, "Oh, regulation, that sounds like control. That means that sounds like big government, and I want to abolish that." And kind of that speaks to this populism that he has done such a good job of stirring up. But a regulation is a protection.
Yeah.
Like, let's not lose sight of that. It's not just about randomly controlling. It is a protection of human beings, and we have seen the things that happen. Like when we dump chemicals into the environment, we see what happens. We see illness. We see very, very serious birth defects. We see things happen as a direct result of not having those environmental protections in place.
Yes, and there's some. I think there's an argument to be had, absolutely, about certain regulations. And I think it's reasonable to say, okay, wait, let's examine this regulation and make sure that it actually makes sense, that it's being implemented in a sensible way.
Well, some are just like dumb red tape.
Right.
Some are just like, it's a regulation that you have to fill out this form in triplicate. No, just sit down.
Right, yeah.
But when it comes to like safety
right, yeah.
and the environment,
like, let's not dump toxic waste from coal mine, coal companies into rivers. I don't think that there's, and even if there is some gray area there, perhaps, they just did away with the rule, period. I mean, it wasn't like, okay, here.
Lessened.
Yeah, let's look at this carefully.
Anything but lead, okay?
Right.
No.
It was just bonk. Okay, go ahead, dump that stuff. We don't care.
And ostensibly, that is about cost. Mm-hmm. I mean, it always is.
Yeah,
it's always about money
in the
capitalist world.
Right. So so that'll bring jobs. And then we'll be able to protect the environment better, except for the rivers we just dumped all the stuff in.
Because the rivers will be too toxic to deal with.
It's an unfortunate collateral damage, I think.
Yeah, we'll be making tons of money. At least people in power will be making tons of money at the heads of corporations.
Right.
But the rest of us are going to be dead.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I honestly don't have a problem with... I do think that we can take certain aspects of environmentalism too far. I think that there are some things where you have to give... You've got to give and take, perhaps, a little bit in terms of industry and economic... issues and that sort of thing.
I'm not really a sharer.
But okay. No, but I mean, this is all of what I'm saying demands having a reasonable, informed conversation. And that just isn't happening right now. No. You know, it's all either,
that's not a thing we do.
Do away with all coal mining or do away with all penguins or whatever. You know, I mean, not that the coal mining affects the penguins, but you know what I mean.
Okay,
it's like all that.
Hold up. Sidebar on that. Did you see that the Trump sons were going today to, I forget if it was Wyoming or Montana. Montana, to shoot
prairie dogs, right?
Prairie dog, yeah. Particularly the blacktail prairie dog. And it is their mating season. So, and
the Trump sons or the prairie
dogs? The prairie dogs.
Because we've got enough Trumps right now. We don't.
Yeah, we're all good. Zing. Terrible. I don't want to know anything about their mating season at all. And also, I think in pictures, so I'm not going to speak to you for like 20 minutes. Because that's horrifying. No, the prairie dogs. But there's a story up about it. And it's a terrible story because they interview somebody who is like an expert in this kind of prairie dog. And they're like, this is really, really bad because it's their mating season right now. So they're essentially going to be shooting all these pregnant prairie dogs.
Okay.
And also, they go on to describe that they have one of the most sophisticated communication systems in the animal kingdom outside of humans, beyond dolphins, beyond elephants. Like, they are really good communicators. They even, the little prairie dogs will protect one another. They will, like, put their bodies in front of one another to protect each other from harm.
Wow.
Not that that makes a being more or less deserving of not being shot by one of the Trump children. But I'm just saying that makes it a little more heartbreaking. I tweeted the story earlier, and I was like, I'm going to cry over this part about they know what's coming.
Right.
I mean, my tweet was halfway to the prairie dog. Like, if you guys can read this, run.
The good news is if they communicate so well, maybe there'll be a prairie dog march against the Trumps and they can organize.
Maybe.
Resist.
Resist the black.
I don't know what a prairie dog voice would be. Sorry, I couldn't really do that.
Right. I assume it'd be little.
Yeah.
A little.
Squeaky.
Squeaky. Kinda. I don't even know. Like a chipmunk.
Right.
The elven situation. Anyway, but yes, that is a thing.
Ugh.
Lots of. And I mean, here's the thing. When we start pulling apart environmental regulations and things like that, when we start talking about them, there's always, oh, there's all this nuance to it and there's all these details. And there's, yes, true. But it is always about what benefits big business. I mean, at the end of the day, it's always that. And that mm-hmm. almost always answers it. Ugh. Okay. We're talking all about politics tonight. Who knows how far we're going to get, but we're certainly going to try to talk about as many of this week's political headlines as possible. Amy Guth, Rex Hupke in tonight on the Saturday Night Special. Back in just a bit on 720 WGN. Amy Guth and Rex Hupke in tonight on the Saturday Night Special. You may see us team up other times for Guth and Hupke on Politics, our weekly podcast that is on WGNRadio.com, WGN Plus app that is real awesome. And if you don't have it, you should go get it. And it's also on iTunes. And we it is therapy for us, but we talk about all the political headlines from the week and hypothesize and cry or whatever's going on. Do all those things. So we're here in studio doing that. So it's less swearing tonight, but still trying to tackle all the politics that we possibly can.
Still some crying. A little crying.
There definitely is going to be some crying, especially with that super weird thing you said right before the last break about mating season of prairie dogs or the Trump children.
Mm.
Could have gone okay. all day without that. Anyway.
And good night, everybody.
And we're out. So we were just talking about so much we have to talk about. We've been talking about the science march that happened today around the world in many, many cities and about some environmental protections that have been rolled back by the Trump administration. Namely, we were talking about the one that almost immediately on I think, 2 weeks into February mm-hmm. or so, the stream protection rule, that was pulled right back, just saying it was all about what chemicals companies, specifically in the coal industry, could and could not dump in rivers and streams. And instead of amending that, it was just kind of dumped. It was just gone. It was, we're done here. Dump whatever you need to.
Yeah. Just throw it in the stream with the rest of the way. They just took the regulation and bam, there it is.
Yeah. So there's that. So we were taking a look at some of the other things. Shortly thereafter, about 10 days or so later, the clean water rule, that was also threatened. And it just kind of kept going. And we were saying before the break how we get caught up on the word regulation. And I think that's kind of the crux of the argument, because there's one side saying, but regulations are choking the government and it's empowering, it's like making the government too big, and that needs to be reduced without regard to the fact that a regulation is a protection. And I hate red tape as much as anybody, but we're not talking about red tape. We're talking about protecting the environment and human beings. And we've seen so many times when there's polluted land or water and people are living around it, suddenly very bad things start to happen to those people.
Yeah, like the fracking videos that have people near fracking sites who are suddenly able to light their water on fire as it comes out of the spout, and those sorts of things. So there are reasons to have these things in place. And I agree with you. I think especially when it comes to environmental areas, health-related areas, some people just want the government to do nothing. And I guess let companies police themselves and that sort of thing. And I think.
And that, I mean, I think that's an, sorry to cut you off, but I think that's an interesting part of that is I think a lot of people that are, that there's kind of two pieces when we're talking about peeling back a regulation mm-hmm. and the people that are in favor of doing so. There's kind of the, when the Trump administration is speaking to populism and speaking to kind of that core voter that we saw of his, there's a sense of, you know, you have too much to contend with. There's too much government on you and on your head and on your household. But that's not really what it's about. This is about, like, holding corporations and power structures accountable. And that's the part we don't talk about enough. We talk about the everyman. We mm-hmm. talk about and how a regulation or a law might, may or may not, you know, affect that individual. But it is so much, it is less about individuals for this administration, and so much while he speaks to individuals and makes us believe, or makes some people believe, that it is about the individual. It is so much about big business. I mean, look at the guy's background. That's what he came from. That's who he cares about. That's what it is about.
Yeah. The stream protection rule wasn't causing any individual person, every person out there.
No one in the world was like...
It was a problem for the coal companies because they had to spend money to not put toxic waste into streams. So the...
Nobody was like, my stream is too clean.
Right. Yes, exactly.
I need some pollution in my river, please.
I am being denied a toxic waste. Right. I don't want the government coming between me and my glowing cheeks.
Right. And that was just the beginning, because then we started seeing, I thought this one terrified me deeply, was when the word science was removed from the mission statement of the EPA's Office of Science and Technology. Again, the EPA's Office of Science and Technology removed the word science from its mission statement. Like, just sit with that one for a minute.
It's now the EPA's Office of and Technology. Why can't we say science? It's a thing. It exists. That's what we do. You know, and that gets back to that. You know, almost an assault on knowledge in general, or you know, that sort of anti-intellectualism. It's like, no, we. Why would you do that? What is the point of doing that unless you are just trying to dampen the thing that keeps telling you that you have to do certain things to protect the world?
Can I ask you a question? Since you are the true analysts,
lay it on us, David.
How much of all of this stuff is really about giving a break to business, and how much of this may just be Donald Trump trying to eradicate anything with the name Obama attached to it from memory?
I think that's a fair question.
I think it's a mix, actually. Yeah, I agree with you.
Probably a little of both.
Yeah, I mean, no, there is definitely a conscious effort to try to do as much eradicating, said, of everything Obama did as possible. And that's some of that's out of spite, some of that's just because that plays well with the base. So I think it's a mix. I mean, I think there's he's, without question, he's getting massive pressure from large companies to do away with a lot of these regulations and everything. That's what they wanted. That's why they gave him a ton of money. And you're just seeing this now. It's almost a quid pro quo practically on some of these fronts. So, but yeah, I don't think they're fond of the Obama anything.
Yeah, that is a valid point. I'm glad you brought that up, David. I think it is a mix too. We're talking about, I mean, and this isn't like trash talking. This is what we see in front of us every single day. We have a very insecure leader in the White House, leading a very insecure administration that is tumultuous, that is not a stable administration at all. It's quite volatile, and we're seeing, you know, constant movement in it and constantly mismanaged information and announcements and things like that. So I think, you know, there's a degree of, if I had to guess, I would say he probably feels very threatened by anything that Obama did, good or bad, like anything. I think it's just that guy did it. I'm replacing him. I'm done. I want rid of it. But I think also he is loyal to big business. He is loyal to the system that props up big business and rewards power seats and things like that.
He let's remember, he put in as the head of the EPA a person who has repeatedly sued the EPA.
That's my favorite.
So he's
now, Rick Perry did say, "I regret that comment," and he did that back a little bit. But as well you should if you become head of the EPA.
Yeah. Well, no, that's right. Yeah. And I mean, it's just there are many, there are myriad elements here that are just.
He was appointed, that he wasn't even clear on what his job would be.
Right.
I mean, within hours, reporters were in Rick Perry's face asking him, and he was like, we're going to find out.
Yep. Here we go.
Here we go. Here's some things.
The Obama stuff is, I mean, look at the crowd. This is a little tangent, I guess, but the crowd size from the inauguration. If you need any sense of how he feels about, if he feels threatened by Obama's legacy, then just look at that, because they had to pretend that a certain number of people that's low was actually high, and you know, I mean, there was photographic.
And here's the thing: if he would have just owned that and just said, you know what, I'm not from DC. I'm outside this game. I'm not from politics. I'm from outside. I come from a different place, but I'm going to get in here and I'm going to figure it out. Not that. I would be like, yay, okay, great. But nonetheless, that would have just played better. Mm-hmm. Because he, you know, I feel like there's power in owning and acknowledging your opposition's narrative and just saying the thing instead of, but, and disagree with me if you like, but it's classic fascism to just deny rather than say, okay, fair enough, but you know what, I'm not from the DC thing, I'm from outside, I'm sure. An outsider, I'm gonna figure it out, I will build crowds myself, I don't need them right now, but I'm gonna have them later. No, he's just like, nope, they were big, nope, big crowds, nope. That's classic fascist move, to just deny and push your own narrative over and over and over and over again. So many things to wrestle with. Amy Guth, Rex Hupke here on the Saturday Night Special tonight. We're going to take a little break, get you to news, all that good stuff. Back in just a bit on 720 WGN.
Sur mon lit à bouffer sa langue en buvant trop mon whisky. Quant à moi, peu dormi, vie débris. Mais j'ai dû dormir dans la gouttière où j'ai eu un flash. En quatre couleurs.
720 WGN. Little saplan pour moi for you there. It works for me, he says. Amy Guth, Rex Hupke on the Saturday Night Special tonight, hanging out. Talking all about politics. As you know, here on the Saturday Night Special, I usually pick one topic and we talk about it all night long with a whole bunch of people, but I'm merging two shows tonight. And so another show that I do, which I do, is a podcast, and it is on WGNradio.com or on the WGN Plus app, where you can also find it on iTunes, is with Chicago Tribune columnist Rex Hupke, and is Guth and Hupke on Politics, and we talk about all the political things that happened that week. We usually do not get to all of them, because inevitably, the hour is coming to the end, and we're like, oh, wait, this other thing.
We forgot we bombed Syria. That actually did happen.
Because there's so much that happens in a week that you know, you're like, okay, there's a Sessions thing, there's a Trump thing, there's a this thing, there's a this thing, there's a Bill O'Reilly thing. And then you're like, oh, wait, we're out of time, but yeah. We haven't even gotten to Syria yet. Yeah.
Sorry, Syria, about the giant bomb we dropped.
I mean, it's crazy.
or the Tomahawk missiles.
The speed at which political headlines fly at us. So we by no means are going to tackle them all this evening, but we have certainly been talking about a lot of them. One thing, when we talk about politics, we have to look across the Atlantic to France, because it is about 3 a.m. right now in France. But in a few hours, polls are going to be opening. For the way they do elections there is there's one general election with several candidates, and which narrows it down to two people, much as we do the primary. But instead of having then a great gap, it's just a couple of weeks. So on May 7th, there'll be a final vote to decide between the two who win this vote that starts in a few hours.
Yes, and it will be interesting.
It will be very interesting. It is... it's contentious. I mean, all elections are contentious. But as we look to Le Pen, there's a lot of controversy around her. Speaking of populism, which has been the password for this show tonight, for sure. You know, she is cloaked in controversy.
Mm-hmm. She's France's Trump, basically.
She is. She is totally France's Trump. There's a lot of conversation about her father, who has some, let's say, charitably, ties to some perhaps anti-Semitism stuff. Like, I don't even know why I'm going to be charitable about that. The guy is super into that.
Yes.
Or was. I think he's deceased.
Yeah. And she was trying to bring the party that he created sort of out from under,
like,
the shadow of that.
Let's get away from that and move. Yeah. Now, I think there is an interesting parallel here. And I'm talking as I'm thinking. So this is going to be like a little bit half baked, but nonetheless, I think it is interesting, as much effort, as much focus as we've put on her father, when we talk about that family, and she's kind of been like, hey, you know what? I'm not the same person as him. I'm changing that party. I'm doing this. To me, it's interesting that we also have, on this side of the ocean, we have this Ivanka and Trump doing their thing. I'm not going to even call him Donald, whatever, but you know, we have Ivanka and her father. And she's taken this official role. She's now appointed a chief of staff. All of these things have happened. It's just an interesting parallel of fathers and daughters, when she had also initially kind of like, well, you know, we're not the same person. And she had not distanced herself from him during the campaign season, but had certainly distinguished herself as an individual, it seemed like, a little bit. And now there she is, working in an official capacity in the White House.
Yeah. So unfortunately, in our case, the troubling father is actually our president, but whereas in France the troubling father is not the one running for president. But still, yeah, it is interesting, and we're starting to see here the influence that she's having on, or at least trying to have on him. And honestly, I mean, one of the things that I find it mildly amusing, really, is that a lot of very conservative people, and especially a lot of hardcore Trump supporters specifically, are worried about her because they think she's a liberal, basically. I mean, they think, you know, they think that in a lot of ways she's going to push him to the left.
I think if she was a dude, that wouldn't be coming up.
But they say the same thing about Jared, her husband, too, Jared Kushner, who's also wielding an awful lot of power, maybe more than her in some ways, although I think she's the one that dad listens to.
Identifying as a Democrat.
Yeah, yeah. And so was
Ivanka. Prior to.
Yeah, they both were. So anyway, it's weird. But yeah, there's a tempering effect that they're at least attempting to have. And I don't know if it will be effective or if it is effective at all at this point. But certainly Marine Le Pen she's seems to be a pretty significant step away from a lot of the really crazy stuff that her father was embracing. Marine Le Pen just recently raised all kinds of chaos because she said that she argued that France was not responsible for the Jewish people that were turned over to the Nazis during World War II.
Yeah,
and I was like, and pretty much everybody was like, no, that doesn't even.
So my people are from an area of France, and I can tell you otherwise.
Yeah, okay, so, there you go. So her argument was bizarre. I mean, she was trying to basically say, like, the people controlling France at that time were not really the French government. The French government had kind of fled. But everybody's like, no, what are you talking about? You're
just please.
Yeah. And again, when it comes to, I don't know why people ever dance around that
issue.
Dance
around any kind of Holocaust thing.
Yeah,
I mean,
we
saw this on a very different scale, but we saw this with Sean Spicer just like, what, a week or two ago, in which he said, when he was talking about Syria and he was trying to say, oh, well, you know, Hitler didn't gas his own people. And I was like, what just happened? And then immediately follows with Holocaust centers,
right,
where I lost my mind.
Yeah.
And there were some interesting shots of people, of reporters in that White House press briefing and the looks on their faces when, like, I'm sorry, did he just say Holocaust Center?
I don't know how, honestly, I'm amazed that there have not been more reporter head explosions in the, like, just actual bursting of heads in those, in those news conferences, because it's just, what? What just happened?
And it's like, it's one thing to marvel at it, but look, here's the thing, it is still pushing a brand of anti-Semitism out into the world. There are many ways to do things. There's a very big overt way in which we saw where millions of people were carted off and put to their deaths. And then there are subtle ways in which a narrative is put where a big thing is diminished or denied outright,
right,
where things are joked about, where, I mean, there are many ways to be an anti-Semite.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just, I mean, I think that's the problem when we talk about race. People say that, oh, well, I'm not a racist because I've never committed a crime against, like, that. No. Racism takes many forms in action and thought. And I think sometimes you're like, well, I haven't done anything that bad, so therefore I'm okay. But that doesn't fly. It is a spectrum of anything on the hate thing is a spectrum. And you can be on any end of it or fall anywhere in the middle.
Right. Yeah, and I totally agree. And you're never going to see the people who are impacted by the racism or the anti-Semitism. They're not going to be the ones that are cavalier about comments when it comes to a certain event. It's only the people who have not been affected in one way or the other, or who cannot relate somehow to what that feels like or what that means. And yeah, that's troubling. And it's especially troubling when it's coming from the highest levels of our government. France's government, potentially.
And I think if she wins, I think that kind of superpower of the two of them, who ideologically are so similar, I think would be disastrous.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be a real problem. He, on the heels of the shooting that happened just recently on the Champs-Élysées, Trump said the event would, quote, probably help her in the election.
And again, what?
Indeed, it might.
Right.
Because it will play upon, I mean, people don't make decisions with facts enough. They make decisions with emotions.
Mm-hmm.
which becomes a problem when there are not enough facts around them when they're making a decision with their emotions. But if you suddenly have fear, fear is a very powerful one. And if you're driving a decision with fear, well, indeed, that might sway an election.
Sure.
Absolutely, it could. But don't say that.
And especially don't say that if you're the president of the United States.
Well, there's
just
yeah.
No, I mean, you know, that is taking something that had just happened involving the death of a police officer
yeah.
and...
If you're going to issue a statement, say something about
sure, but right, you
our
don't,
condolences to
yeah,
him.
Exactly. Let the, you know, everybody else make the comments. You don't have to do that if you're president, and
well,
it's not helping anything.
No, and we've talked many times on the podcast about this sense of dignity of office. And if you have the most powerful position in the country, you should bring a certain dignity of office to that. In my mind, that includes not inviting Ted Nugent to the White House to take selfies with a picture of Hillary, whether
Sarah,
no matter what you think about Hillary. Like, that's just not a thing you should do to be a dignified visitor of the White House.
Why are you forgetting Sarah Palin and Kid Rock also? Come on. Like, I guess you're...
Kid Rock. Why, wasn't he... Didn't you're he have so, political
you're so,
aspirations?
Your anti-Nugent bias is coming through so hard right now, Amy.
Oh, my Lord. Wasn't Kid Rock going to run for office? I think I blocked that out of my mind.
Yeah, there were some murmurings
about
it.
Too horrible to think
that. Was kind of like immediately post-victory, post-Trump victory, when everybody's like, yeah, and all the Duck Dynasty guys, and we're all going, woo! Everybody's running for office now. Anybody can do it.
Right. Anyone can do it. Qualifications, not necessary. Oh, good times. Amy Guth, Rex Hupke, here on the Saturday Night Special. Back in just a bit on 720 WGN. WGN, Amy Guth and Rex Hupke at the wheel with you tonight till 9 o'clock here on the Saturday Night Special. You may find us on, we do Guth and Hupke on Politics, where we talk about the week's headlines in a fairly irreverent way. You may find that on WGNradio.com, on the WGN Plus app, and on iTunes. And so we have combined the two shows, the regular Saturday Night Special, where I pick one topic and talk about it all night in depth. And we have just mashed those two shows together. So we're talking all about politics tonight. And Rex is here in studio with us, hanging out. It's all good. And you know what? We're not going to get to even like a fourth of the things we said we were going to.
We never do.
We never do. But there is so much. And I know there's always a lot of political news in any administration, but this one has a lot. A little bit.
There does seem to be a shocking amount of things that keep happening.
And here's the thing. Like, we have said from the beginning, because we started the podcast talking about politics long before the election. And we have said since the start, and especially since the election and since the inauguration, you know what? We are highly critical because we do not... You know, we have discussed many times ways perhaps that he is not qualified to be president. But we have said from the beginning, we will be very critical of any leader, as we should, even people we vote for. And that's something I've bemoaned a lot, that we've kind of gotten into this place where it's somehow if you're critical of the person you support, even somehow you're a traitor, you've betrayed them. And we've gotten into this very, it's become very polarized. But we've been saying from the start, I'm getting to my point, that although we will be very critical, if and when the guy does something great, we'll be the first to say, hey, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
And it is, we haven't done that yet.
No, we sure haven't.
But perhaps we could.
But there are things that could. And you know what? Something has happened last week. A 30-year-old U.S. citizen, Aya Hijazi, and her husband, Mohammed, as well as four other humanitarian workers, were released from Egypt. They'd been held there since 2014 on what seem to have been trumped-up charges. And the Obama administration tried to get them out and was not able to get Egyptian President al-Sisi, Abdel Fattah al-Sisi, to release them. And Trump managed to do
out.
It. Yeah, he did it. And
we're going to hand it to him on that.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think Thank goodness.
There are nuances to that. Yeah, like, there's a lot of stuff there.
Yeah, and there was.
And one might say, oh, it's not about the Humanitarian Act. It's about an allyship with Egypt. It's about this, or it's about infuriating this enemy of Egypt. I mean, yes, we could do that all day and should.
Right.
But nonetheless, four human beings being held on charges that have alleged to be, you know, that are alleged to not be true, who have been away from home for a long time, are home.
Right. And good people. I mean, people that were there, humanitarian
stuff,
you know.
Right.
So, yeah, I applauded that. Absolutely. And really, I mean,
can you imagine being,
oh, God, in truth,
like being held for 4 years? That would be terrible.
Yeah, that's horrible. And I mean, the people that do that sort of work, and I applaud, I mean, I admire them so much, and they all know the risks of doing that kind of thing. But oh my God, yeah, see, they've been there since May 1st of 2014 was when they were incarcerated, and that's just awful. So yeah, no, I mean, unless a president is trading me for the people who are being kept, I'm always going to applaud him or her for getting people back. So I think if it's me, yeah, maybe I'll suck it up for the team. Depends, I suppose. But
okay, I need those humanitarian workers back. Yeah. Like, we'll give you Hupke.
You can have Hupke. Please take him. Good God.
Take those two. Whatever. Don't
yeah, right.
Them. Take
them. You heard that podcast. But no, seriously, yay. I'm really glad, legitimately, and that is a good move. And you know what? More of that kind of thing, please. Because I've said this too, as a near constant critic of this guy.
Yeah.
I would like nothing more than to have to praise him for things, because I criticize him because I'm concerned about our country. People are going to disagree with that. That's fine.
Right.
But if he is doing things that are good for our country, yeah.
People are going to disagree with your motivation, you mean?
Yeah, no. I mean, people are going to disagree with, right, they're going to think I'm saying I'm critical of him purely for ideological reasons.
Yeah, yeah.
And we can get into this, is a whole other discussion, because, you know, I think one of the problems perhaps from on the left right now is that people, opponents of Donald Trump, are not making it clear enough that this is not just ideology. This is, I mean, I take issue with Donald Trump because I am afraid of Donald Trump. You know, I do not think he's a qualified person. I sometimes wonder if he's a completely altogether sane person at times.
Well, when he's tweeting at 3 a.m,
yeah,
some really seemingly, look, if my neighbor was tweeting some of the things at 3 a.m that he tweets, I would be knocking on the door being like,
yeah,
do you need a hug?
You okay, man?
Everything all right?
Because if we were talking right now, if we had President Rubio or President Bush right now, I would have issues, absolutely, with some of their policies.
Look, you and I were both critical of things that the last several presidents did.
Yes, but I would not be on it as much as I am.
Sure.
And so there's a difference. And anyway, but the point, though, is that I would like nothing more than to see Donald Trump start pulling himself together as a president, start doing things that are positive for this country, start taking other people's, not just feelings, but other people's opinions and needs into consideration, and not being so solely focused only on his own quote-unquote people.
And I think always, I have to point this out, but always it seems like he's focused on his own interests and those that serve seats of power in this
mm-hmm.
country.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
is not uncommon for a politician to do. Plenty of politicians have done that from the start.
Yeah.
I believe that there's just a lack of awareness of the human and environmental toll attached to that.
Yeah. You're president of all people. And
yeah, not just the people you want to lead. You're president of everybody.
And again, we talked about this before the show, the White House Correspondents' Dinner. And again, I White House Correspondents' Dinner, if he goes or doesn't go, whatever, I don't really care one way or the other on that front, I guess. But he's holding a rally that night.
See,
and these rallies are tailored only to his core supporters.
What is the purpose of campaigning?
Yeah.
You've already been elected.
Right.
Ish. But whatever. Ish.
That's what we're calling it these days.
Right. But like, what is the purpose? Why are you still campaigning? You got the keys to the White House, bro. You're in. You're there.
You can give it a year or so before you got to start that stuff up again.
Yeah, what are you doing?
Right.
Why are you campaigning? I don't see the purpose of that. I mean, to me, that feels like a move of a fascist leader.
Yeah, right.
In addition to, like, denying information. No, the crowds were big. The crowds were the biggest. And not relenting and just deny. I mean, that's a strange move. I think, too, the very freewheeling nature of his schedule seems kind of odd and a little troubling, because there is an expectation of how you're going to behave if you're in that office. And look, I'm all in favor of doing things your own way. And mm-hmm. I, in many business settings, say, you know, in like legacy business, in media business, in any business, I'm always like, well, people shouldn't do things just because that's the way they've always been done. So I applaud anybody who wants to just do things a new way. But there's a way to do that to be original. And there's a way to do that to just kind of like thumb your nose at the system that you've entered and not show that dignity of office. Complicated. Again, we're going to get to maybe a fourth of the things that we plan to talk about tonight, because we're trying to just talk about all the political things happening this week. So very many things. Amy Guth, Rex Hupke in on the Saturday Night Special tonight. Back in just a bit, and we'll get you to news and plenty more things about all the things happening politically right now when we come back. 720 WGN. Amy Guth and Rex Hupke here on the Saturday Night Special. We do a podcast together, and it is called Guth and Hupke on Politics. You can find that at WGNradio.com. You can find that at the WGN Plus app or the tab on the website, and you can find it on iTunes. We gather once a week. It is therapy for us, but we gather once a week and we look at all the political headlines from that week and we talk about them. And again, it's therapy for us because sometimes there's crying, sometimes there's shouting. There's usually laughing.
Yes, lots of laughing. Laughter helps. We were just discussing a possible new promotional tool where we will just come and talk to you if you'd like to hear our podcast.
I want to give a shout out to the caller that we had in the 847 area code. Thank you so much for listening and for your kind words. But yeah, we'll come to your house.
Sure. Yeah. Why not?
We'll just set up in your front yard.
Maybe if there's a Dairy Queen nearby, we could meet there. I really dig Dairy Queen. So
you've mentioned Dairy Queen and blizzards like repeatedly.
I'm trying. I do everything I can to get Dairy Queen to hire me
as a brand ambassador. You just want them to sponsor us. You can have a blizzard, yes. My pre-show blizzard. Mr. Hupke, your pre-show blizzard is here.
I have pretty high, you know, relatively high, you know, ethical standards, but I will absolutely sell out for Dairy. I mean, 100%.
I will totally endorse them.
You guys can do anything. You could be selling, you know, cups in endangered species pelts, and I will still happily endorse your product.
That's running counter to what we were saying about the Trump children shooting animals earlier in the program. I'm just letting you know. Terrible.
Man's got to have a cause.
Good times. Well, we have been talking about lots and lots of things. And, you know, we're talking about politics. And so that's obviously we've been talking about the president quite a bit. So do you remember the contract with the American voter that Trump put out? And he was saying, like, this here is my 100-day action plan to make America great again.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very official, and he like signed it and had a little blank on there, like your signature, as if the thing is legally binding.
Yes, it is a legally binding
like,
contract.
What do I do? Sign it and what?
After signing this, you must help me make America great again.
Right. So it's a two-pager. You can Google and find this.
It's still on his website, right?
DonaldJTrump.com/contract. You can see this for yourself. Now, he has said, I will read this to you. It says, what follows is my 100-day action plan to make America great again. Let me pause there and say, I realize that he made Make America Great Again like a catchphrase brand, but the editor in me is really pained to see him capitalizing all of those words. Make is not a word that should ever be capitalized if it's not at the beginning of the sentence. Anyway, it goes on to say, it is a contract between myself and the American voter and begins with restoring honesty and accountability and bringing change to Washington. On the first day of my term in office, my administration will immediately pursue the following. And he lists a bunch of stuff. On page 2, he says, I will work with Congress to introduce the following broader legislative measures and fight for their passage within the first 100 days of my administration. I would like to point out that on page 2, how many has he done?
That would be none. And yeah. I almost ran out of X's in term trying to X them off in the process. There are, let's say, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. There's 10 things, and 0 of which have been accomplished. And we noted earlier this week that suddenly his 100-day action plan, he doesn't think so highly of it. He tweeted about how this arbitrary, it was a very snide
no
tweet.
No big deal.
This arbitrary 100-day mark, no matter what I do, the media would kill me over it and blah, blah,
no,
blah.
No, you said it, yeah. Dude.
It's still on your website, man. And it's in bold, too. 100-day action plan.
Like, he took the Spanish version of the White House website down so quickly. Like, we know he knows how to take crap down.
Yeah.
Take it down if you don't want to say that anymore. But here it is. We've printed it out. It is, I'm sitting here holding a copy of it right now. And it says, his 100-day action plan, and he has not done those things. It closes with, "This is my pledge to you," in bold, followed by, "And if we follow these steps, we will once more have a government of, by, and for the people." Which, again, that line creeped me out because he's never been one to be about all the people he is governing.
Mm-mm.
He is over a select group. And I think a lot of people will agree with me on that. But he's kind of panicking. I mean, it's big time
yeah.
panicking, because he's put three very large goals out to happen in the next week.
Correct.
Basically, yeah. he's got to avoid a government shutdown, put out the new tax thing, and the new healthcare thing. He's got to make that all happen in a week.
Yeah, because next Saturday is the 100-day mark, and it's remarkable. And the emotional insecurity of this guy is so painfully transparent. It never ceases to amaze me. And so he's saying, okay, he talks about, oh, we've had the best first 90 days of any president in the history of the universe, blah, 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 blah.
The lowest approval rate ever.
Demonstrably not true. I mean, just all of this is just not, you can say it all you
fascist
want.
Fascist technique.
Yeah, right. You can say it all you want, but you have nothing at this point to hang your hat on, except you could argue the Supreme Court justice who was put in place, and that's a whole other issue, I know, and I know a lot of people
have a whole other show.
Right, but so give him that, give him the Supreme Court justice, and there's no legislative achievement whatsoever. The GOP has spent the past 8 years saying they're going to repeal and replace Obamacare. That completely tanked. Trump's saying he wants them to try it again this week. I mean, it was such a disaster when they rolled it out a few weeks ago and it didn't go anywhere.
Oh my God, such a disaster.
And there's nothing that they've done. The only thing that they've possibly accomplished between then and now is to make it more conservative, because that's who they have to bring on board in the House, is the more conservative Freedom Caucus folks who basically just want, you know, poor people to have to roll the dice and see if they get health care or not. But so if they do that, they may get them, but they're going to scare off some of the moderate Republicans. And even if it does pass the House, it's not going anywhere in the Senate with that kind of draconian changes and stuff like that, where they're going to be pulling Medicaid from people. I mean, it's not happening. It's obviously not happening. So the congressional Republicans have to work with the Democrats and come up with a way to keep the government operating, and the deadline for that is Friday.
Like,
that's
that
job
alone
one.
In a week to yeah. do that in a week, that's huge.
Yeah, and since when is Congress under, whether it was under Obama or whoever, they can't do anything fast. I mean, good God, I mean they couldn't vote on approving whether light bulbs are hot or something like that in any reasonable period of time. So they're not going to do this. And he's obviously just throwing everything
at
the wall. Yeah.
He's panicking, saying, oh my God, I've done nothing on my 100-day plan.
Right.
I'm about to hit that 100-day mark. Perhaps this job was not as easy as I thought it might be when I was sitting there a couple years ago talking a bunch of smack about it.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe I'm in over my head.
And this is where this is what drives me nuts as at least marginally rational human being, is that, you know, there's an easy fix here if you're just honest and intelligent about it, which is to just, if he would just step back and say, you know what,
this is harder than I thought.
Exactly.
That's
thank
all
you.
Do.
Just say, this is harder than I thought, but I am going to buckle down and I'm going to understand. I'm going to learn stuff. I'm going to mm-hmm. figure out how this works and I'm going to get stuff done. And I shouldn't have said 100 days, you know, bad on me, and then move on. And you know what? A lot of people, myself included, frankly, would be like, oh, okay.
Fair enough.
It's a lot harder.
For,
I'm not going to write that 100-day, that column excoriating him over the 100-day mark, which I already have half written in my head. I'm not writing that column if he does that.
Right.
But he's not going to do that. So I'm going to write the column. Huh?
Yeah.
Sucker.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the thing. You don't, what he's done is he has written, his mouth has written a check that butt can't cash is what the thing is, right? It's one of those.
Is that
and from it's
Top
like,
Gun or something like that?
Who knows where it's from? It's from my grandma. Like, she says all those things. But it's like, if you just don't set that goalpost up. Just don't say that. Just say, here are the things I'm going to do.
Yeah.
You don't need to say in 100 days.
Right.
I mean, that's kind of classic, like coming in, taking over a business move. Mm-hmm. Like, in the first 90 days, I will do this. In the first quarter, I will do this.
Right.
But now he's like, as you said earlier, not only is he admonishing the goalpost that he himself built. He's trying to saw it down. But again, you built the goalpost.
Yeah.
If you had any doubt, especially if you're changing industries, going from real estate and reality television celebrity to the president of the United States, perhaps let it occur to you, I might need a little more of a learning curve than others who have been in Washington for a very long time.
Yeah, exactly. And the and he's simultaneously trying to cram stuff through to get some accomplishments
when he's
while
all...
saying, I don't care about that 100
Right.
So childish. It's like, no, I don't care. Whatever. Big deal. I'm going to take my ball and go home.
Right. Where like he's continually communicated things very badly. I mean, even let's rewind to the executive order around travel and immigration. Like that one was so badly handled. Even people there who had to enforce it were like, wait, what are we doing? What? Okay. Am I who? Wait, you're me? Wait, you? What? Like they didn't know. And so it was
xenophobic
all...
says what?
Perfect. It was totally that. And so it was handled so badly. And we keep seeing this. Like we saw this when he was like the healthcare thing. Like that was a mess. It was such a mess. He says things when he even when he was talking about like all the things he's going to push through in the next week, people on his team were like, wait, we're doing what? We are? Oh,
yeah, right.
Okay. So I'm not going on vacation this week. Okay. Do you think I can make it to bar trivia on Tuesday? No. Okay, fine. That's fine. No,
that's
it's just
not happening.
It's
okay,
fine.
Good.
It's fine. Okay. It's fine. It's fine. No, it's fine. So there's that. I mean, it's just so, like so sloppily handled. He just, at very least, like get a PR team, dude.
Yeah.
Like handle that. I mean, not to mention his, you know, his Sean Spicer. I have so much to say about Sean Spicer, but I have so much contempt for him. It is your job to communicate effectively.
Yeah.
And he gets so flustered and freaked out.
Sure. I mean, take away the Holocaust centers and all the other stuff, and he's just really bad
at
communicating.
He's bad at his job.
Yeah.
And the person, like, the messages he has to share are, I'm sure, hitting him every day going, oh my gosh, I got to go make a statement about this.
Yeah.
I would not want to be his press secretary.
No.
You couldn't pay me enough to be Trump's press secretary. But then you have someone who is not that great at it.
Yeah. That may be why Sean Spicer is doing it, because nobody else will. he's the
like,
only.
I don't want to. How much will it cost me? I was like, you're the last person on earth that will be my, okay, fine. Right. So many things to talk about. But you know what? We got to take a break. But when we come back, I want to talk about that kind of defensive stance that he takes and that insecurity. That clear emotional insecurity that he has on display, because I think that is playing out on the world stage in a way that's a little concerning to me. So we're going to talk about that in just a little bit. Amy Guth and Rex Hupke on the Saturday Night Special, back in just a bit on 720 WGN. WGN. Amy Guth and Rex Hupke here on the Saturday Night Special tonight. Nicely done, esteemed producer Tom Hush, with all the good music tonight. Pulling that Cyndi Lauper out. Nice. Good one. Well, as per usual here on the Saturday Night Special, we pick one topic. We talk about it all evening. Tonight's topic is politics. And so we have been doing our best to talk about all of those things, but there's so darn much. I think we can agree on that. Right before the break, we were talking about the perhaps insecure type of defensive temperament of our president. And where that concerns me, Rex, is that, well, many ways. It's, for one, really clogging on my Twitter feed. Let's start with that. But it is interesting to, you know, you wake up in the morning, you look at your phone, and I immediately like look and see how many people have retweeted the president overnight, because he's up all night tweeting crazy things.
Yeah, it's true.
I am very concerned with his little standoff that's happening with Kim Jong-un right now, I believe. Like, two very insecure leaders.
What could possibly go wrong?
Right. We're especially, and I said this on our podcast too, but Kim Jong-un is a very young leader. I think he's about 32 years old. Mm. So I think he's got a little more of a chip on his shoulder, a sense of a little more to prove. They have some psychological overlap, I believe. They do some things the same way. Not entirely, but in some ways. So I am very concerned about the two of them just having like a, just a, like the squaring off thing is not working for me, because it can result in our doom.
Right. I mean, he, you know, I will say Kim Jong-un is bonkers. I mean, like, you know, not, and I'm not putting.
Oh, he's like put hits on people for very minor infractions.
Somebody fell asleep. I believe it was somebody fell asleep in a meeting and he had him shot with an artillery gun. Like, I was like, what? I mean, this is just, and that's like.
I was out late. It was a bachelor. Wait, I was out drinking with you. Yes, why? Did I get shot? What?
Why would you do this to me? But yeah, so, I mean, you know, Trump is his own issue and all that jazz, but he's not Kim Jong-un by any stretch of the imagination. So you're poking a real crazy person here. And I don't, you know, I think foreign policy really does require, and this, and, you know, you can quote me on this, really does require a strategy. Rex Hupke, 2017, foreign policy requires a strategy. This is the wisest thing
Things
I've ever said.
Things require stuff.
Yes, exactly.
Said Rex Hupke.
No, but seriously though, like I don't think you can.
You can't wing it.
Right.
You have to think about it very carefully.
Yeah, you can dislike Barack Obama's foreign policy when he was president, and there are arguments to be had on that front, sure. But it was not scattershot and just like blah, 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 like all over the place. But so, okay, if you're provoking Kim Jong-un, what are we doing here? Are you trying to?
What's your
putting,
plan, bro?
You're putting pressure on China. You do so. I mean, you know, Trump even throughout the election was really big on the. I got a way to solve the ISIS problem. I'm not going to tell you. I'm not going to tell them what it is. I don't want them
didn't
to know.
Have a plan,
right? Which is just garbage. And so, unfortunately, and now you would think he is president. He has all kinds of people around him to advise him.
He has
him and
access to anyone he wants, essentially.
Yes, exactly. So you would think that he would knock that off, but unfortunately, it's the exact same thing that's happening, and across the board. I mean, we're seeing things go on, and him say something, but then somebody, his Secretary of State or
something different,
or Nikki Haley, the UN ambassador, will say something different. That, and you're just like, wait, this has to be. It's terrifying me and you. It's clogging up your timeline, which is also a problem. But it's perhaps even more importantly, I think it's confusing the daylights out of our allies. Not only our allies and also our enemies, too. And somebody might say, well, good, it'll keep our enemies on their toes.
No,
I don't want them on their toes. I want them.
What?
You know, are either of you worried about the fact that there are still hundreds of jobs that he hasn't filled yet?
Well, here's the thing with the job thing. He has promised the return of a factory job. You cannot unring a bell. Once a job has evolved to something
else. I don't mean that. I'm talking about...
Administration.
Oh, in his administration.
There are hundreds of jobs within various agencies that are empty, and they haven't even nominated people.
Well, he's busy on Twitter.
Oh, okay.
He's busy staying up all night tweeting like a cuckoo bird.
And golfing.
And golfing, all the golf. And you can't really hire people from Mar-a-Lago. You're busy. You're doing things. It's warm. You're enjoying the outside.
They have cake. Good cake.
Oh, my God. I was so mad.
Chocolate cake.
Yes, the chocolate cake. Yes.
For reference, we're talking about during everything going down in Syria, he is talking. So he's like... The thing he remembers the most is this cake. It was delicious. It was this. It had all this stuff. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Human beings died, and you're talking about cake.
Yeah. The Chinese president was, they were enjoying some cake together when he told them about the, oh, and by the way, we just dropped 59 Tomahawk missiles on Syria.
FYI.
How about this cake? The frosting. Mm.
That's ridiculous. You know what? We got a caller. Let's say hello. Hi, Mary. You're on WGN.
Hi. I have a question. Whatever happened to Kellyanne Conway?
That is a great question. I don't know.
We haven't heard from her since she told us about Bowling Green.
Yeah, she said moment of silence for the Bowling Green massacre, please. No, she is still around, but her role has become more behind the scenes. And as to why exactly, I could speculate, but I don't know.
But also has something to do with Bowling Green.
But there was never like an official announcement like she is now, blah, 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 blah. But yeah, she's surfaced here and there. There's been a quote or two, but they're not putting her out front very much at all or on the media, on the shows and stuff.
That's a good question, Mary. Thanks for the call. I have had the same thought of like, well, she fell off the earth pretty quickly. You see her in the entourage of stuff, but you don't hear from her.
I miss her. I do not.
I do not. Thanks, Mary. Appreciate the call. Have a great night.
You too. Bye.
Kellyanne. Yeah,
that's
where
a great
have you
question.
Gone?
Oh, my Lord. Kellyanne. That was like sport to get up on Sunday morning and watch all the talking head shows as she's making the rounds of all the things. Right. And just like, what did you just say? What? Yeah. What? I mean, she was like, I mean, there is some art to be learned from her.
Oh, my
of
God.
How, because I mean, I think there is, if someone derails your point, if you're a guest on a program and someone's like pushing you on something you don't want to talk about, there's a way to gracefully, yes, but as I say in my book, I'm here to promote, like, there's a way to do that. But I mean, she did it as boldly as like, I want to talk to you about the glass in these windows. She's like, mm-hmm, because the porcupines in the forest are like, what are you talking? Totally different thing.
Yeah, it was like watching someone who's had their soul surgically removed and and they're still functioning.
And also, it made for really excellent Saturday Night Live sketches.
Oh, my God. Yeah, she was great.
The Kellyanne sketches were darn funny.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like the Trump administration should be a little more thoughtful to our comedic needs.
Yeah.
And run out. Every once in a while, bring Kellyanne back. If Spicer winds up going away, they got to bring him back occasionally.
No, those are some real funny sketches right there.
Melissa McCarthy.
When
stuff.
Melissa McCarthy starts going spicy and gets the Barbies out.
Oh, my God.
Holy
goodness.
Moly.
Yeah.
That is funny. But you know what? Satire is powerful. And often in conservative and controversial political moments, people have emerged comedically that have gotten us through dark times and helped us understand things. I mean, I look back to. I point to this example all the time, but Dave Chappelle did such fascinating satire in a time and really outrageous things happened in his show. And it wasn't, you know, everybody's cup of tea, that show. But nonetheless, suddenly people were talking about big issues like race and major things like that who would never have had that conversation otherwise. So I think there's a lot of power in humor that we don't always acknowledge.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, holy moly, we are out of time already.
That's absurd.
We're just getting started.
I demand a recount.
I have at least 17 more stories in front of me of things we have not discussed. Clearly, it is a conspiracy.
It is. The Russians.
Or somebody.
Dang it.
I don't know. Well, tune into our podcast, Pretty Please. It's every single week. You can find it on WGNRadio.com. Go there, search my last name, G-U-T-H, and you'll find it, Guth and Hupke on politics, or you can find it at the WGN Plus tab on the website or the WGN Plus app that is very, very cool. I think you will enjoy it immensely. Or you can head over to iTunes and subscribe there and check in with us every week. Do the things. Find us on Twitter.
I'm told it is America's most popular political podcast. Many are saying that.
Fake news. Good times.